Vous êtes sur Art District Radio et c'est l'heure de retrouver Luc Seabright dans Jazz Interview pour une rencontre en anglais avec un artiste de jazz. Passez un très bon moment sur Art District.
Hi there, this is Luc Seabright and welcome to our jazz interview program. Today I have on the phone with me Ola Onabule. Ola is a British-Nigerian jazz and soul singer. His first album, More Soul Than Sense, was released in 1995 and has since been followed by 7 more recordings, the latest of which is entitled It's the Peace That Deafens, released in 2015. Since the start of his career, Ola has performed in many of the world's greatest jazz festivals, including Montreal, Vancouver, and London. Our French listeners should take note that he will be performing at Saint Jazz Cap Ferrat Festival on August 9th. Ola, it's a pleasure to have you with us on the phone today. Thanks so much for being here.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So I see you've got quite a few tour dates scheduled in France. Is this the first time you'll be performing there?
No, it isn't, but it is the first time in quite a long while. I think the last time was about 7 years ago.
Oh, awesome. Oh, you must be excited about that.
Oh, well, completely, passionate to play in France because, you know, we make the best part of our living touring around Europe.
Yeah.
And so it's weird to have such a major and essential part of it all, such as France, you know, being excluded from travels. It's just happenstance. It wasn't by design. It's just the way, you know, that particular chip fell that we didn't end up in France. So, yeah, it's great to be going back.
Awesome. Will you be playing mostly songs from your previous albums, or is there going to be some new material in there too?
No new material quite yet, because the songs are just being, you know, they're just being realized. I mean, I've written the album, but, you know, it takes a while to really get a sense of how they'll sit before I take them to a band. I have this weird process, so I have to live with them for a bit. So it's going to be essentially stuff from earlier albums.
Okay, awesome. And what about the band? Are you touring with people that you regularly play and record with?
Yes, three musicians from Britain and two musicians from Germany, but they're guys who I've worked with for many years. John Crawford, who's a London-based pianist, who I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with.
Yep.
Guy J. Hill, who's originally from Uruguay but is London-based as well. And Will Fry, who's on percussion. And then in Europe, I'll be playing with Igor Klugik and with Ludovic Klockner, two German musicians. So, yeah,
and what
we'll bring
they be
the band
playing?
Together. I'm so sorry?
What will they be playing?
Oh, and they'll be playing bass and drums.
Okay, awesome.
Yes.
So I'd really like to talk about your last album. It's The Peace That Deafens, which was released in 2015. Could you sort of take us through the story behind it and sort of how its identity differs a bit from its predecessors?
Yes, the previous albums are probably more distinctly identifiable as soul and funk with jazz influences. And I was happy, you know, to pursue that and to explore that, and I did so across five or six albums. But I'd started to include every so often a song that, you know, reached back to my origins, to my West African origins, to my Nigerian origins. And that voice started to call louder and louder and louder, and so I started to do more exploration and research. And, you know, I'd spent 10 years of my childhood in Nigeria, and so I started to mine those memories of that period, for a story to tell, you know, that I felt needed to be told. Anyway, all of that came to a head on It's the Peace That Deafens, the last album. I assembled something like 40 songs that were rooted in African stories, like either personal experiences or allegories of things that I'd heard and, you know, and other people had experienced, and also kind of trying to codify the whole song into a message about essentially Africa, but yeah, also Africa's relationship with the world. And so the album ended up having this this hybrid, for want of a better word, feel to it, where it was very African, but it was also distinctly jazzy and soulful, yeah, I think. I mean, that was the aim anyway. I hope I achieved that.
And how did you sort of reconnect with that music of that you must have been surrounded with in your early years in Nigeria?
I remembered a lot of the folk songs and the playground songs, you know, the music on the radio, you know, the popular music. I remembered all of that stuff. My parents had spent a holiday with me. They'd come over from Nigeria to spend, you know, 3 months of the summer holiday with me. And as people often do, they bring their music with them.
Yeah.
And that was just incredibly evocative. It really, you know, brought so many memories rushing back. So there were melodies flooding my mind that inspired me. And and so many of them became the catalysts for new ideas and new songs. You know, so I would take, you know, something that maybe I spent a couple of days humming, and it would become this new composition that found its way onto the album.
One great example on your album of that sort of African influence in your music, but that still keeps that sort of powerful funky drive and that soulful tone is the supremely groovy Jankoriko. It's that, in a way, it sort of evokes to me the music of Fela Kuti and Afrobeat. Would you say that's also part of your musical heritage in a way?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was one of those naughty boys in Lagos in the late 70s and early 80s who would bunk off school to go and spend an afternoon listening to Fela's music.
Yeah.
I had all the records, and he was beyond music. He was a powerful and enigmatic political giant, you know, who would,
of course,
speak, you know, visceral truth to power. So, yes, you know, he's unavoidable on the artistic landscape of Africa. So, yeah. The thing about Jankoriko was that it was an opportunity to talk about the sort of things, the sort of kind of social analysis and criticism,
yeah,
that Fela made his mainstay. It was an opportunity to talk about a similar kind of idea.
Can you remind us the story behind the song?
Well, when I was a schoolboy, I was coming back from school in Lagos one day, and a man ran past me, and he was bloodied. And within seconds, a mob ran past me as well, and it was obvious that they were chasing him.
Yeah.
And it all very quickly unfolded in front of me. They caught up with him, and they lynched him. They executed him. It was a summary justice type situation. And I never spoke about that memory to anyone. I just, you know, maybe some kind of post-traumatic thing.
Yeah,
I just,
yeah,
put it aside and went off to school and had a lovely day. And when I started to think of this album, it was the first song I wrote. Mm. The ideas came flooding back. And it occurred to me that people, you know, people enact these acts of brutal justice on one another in lieu of the opportunity to take real actions of justice against the powerful and wealthy people who've made their lives the way they are, such that they feel anger at a man stealing a loaf of bread and take his life from him, when really they want to tear down, you know, the powerful who've made them so poor in a country that's so blessed with natural wealth. And so that's what the song kind of alludes to. And it was just a perfect opportunity to use that Afro beat, that Fela Kuti type beat to express this thing.
And so you mentioned that was the first song you wrote. Was that in a way sort of a catalyst for that rediscovery, or at least that initiative to try and use your African heritage in your music a bit more?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was, in essence, the thing that made me feel that this idea is going to fly. This is not going to sound contrived. It's not going to sound like I'm doing a pastiche or a pantomime of an African living abroad. You know, I felt like this is genuine, and I can really express some authentic truth here.
I'm also curious to ask you about the title, because it's a fascinating title and it's quite enigmatic. Is there a meaning behind that you can convey?
There is, yes. And my granddad used to say to me, the loudest noise in the world is the sound of peace. And I never quite understood what he meant by that, you know. It was quite, as you say, it was quite an enigmatic thing to say. And then I started ruminating on all of this, thinking about it. And I ended up writing a song called It's the Peace That Deafens, because I realized that what he was trying to say is that there's a thing that people do in African countries where, in fear of upsetting the apple cart, they maintain this strained peace, you know, this thing where they don't want a revolution or a war or a fight, But unfortunately, some things just need to be confronted, and this peace is the most raucous sound in the world.
That sort of ties into the story you were telling about the song Jankoriko, and how there's a sort of, instead of tackling the real problems, they're sort of projecting that violence on smaller, more insignificant things.
Cause they put them at the bus so free and climb, but that dread fear in his eyes as he was wrong. And the man in crowd in chase angry and seed. You know victory would come off on his run in the burning sun of that September morning. Just mistake on every man was soon to be redeemed. And yes, justice tipped the scales into the end with Jankoriko.
Absolutely. And so once I'd written the song, and I wrote it, I mean, it's more a set of symbols and metaphors rather than a literal script to the song. And when I wrote it, I just felt, even though it's obscure and maybe not the most accessible of all the songs I've written, it felt like it should be the theme, you know, and consequentially the title for the album.
Well, the title's fantastic. It really draws your attention.
Thank you.
So you've now been performing and recording for over 20 years. Your career is truly international. So I'm curious to know if you're able to sort of look back and appreciate sort of how you've evolved as a musician, how your sort of tastes and musicianship have changed. And if so, sort of does that maturity kind of have an influence on your approach to music today?
I do this thing, actually, where I actively try to retain and maintain and service my wide-eyed, childlike innocence.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, so it's a weird thing because I have to contrive and simulate this innocence thing. And the reason why I do that is because I want to continuously be surprised by the music business. A lot of the inspiration comes from being surprised and not being cynical, and not being jaded and not being overwhelmed by some of the, you know, there's a lot of bureaucracy and there are lots of gatekeepers and, you know, there are a lot of haters and trolls and negativity, but there's also a lot of beauty and a lot of wonder. You get amazing responses from people that you've never met. You sing these songs to them, and you give this thing to them, and in the giving, something bigger than you could have possibly imagined, you know, is created. So I walk this fine line between using my 20 years or more of experience to my advantage and divesting myself of my 20 years of experience.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and just letting what will be happen and amazing.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
You know.
Sadly, I'm looking at the time and I'm going to have to bring this to an end. But so before we go, I'm curious to know, you mentioned at the beginning that there's a new album in the making. Like, is there anything we can learn about that? Can we get a sneak introduction?
So far, so good. I've written about 8 songs, and they seem to be very, very philosophical. And I have a feeling that has to do with the significant birthday I had recently. So I'm thinking about my place in the world and the ephemerality of life, you know, how quickly it's soon, you know, getting to the next major stage.
Yeah.
So I think that's what might be the theme of this album. But we're yet to see.
Awesome. Well, I'm really looking forward to it. Thanks so much, Ola, for talking to us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, really, really appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Once again, that was Ola Onabule. His latest album, It's the Piece That Deafens, It's the Piece That Deafens. You can follow him on Spotify, Facebook, and YouTube. Once again, I'm Luke Seabright, and that was our jazz interview program. Thanks.
C'était Jazz Interview avec Luke Seabright. Vous pouvez écouter cette émission les mardis et jeudis à 8h et 14h et retrouver tous nos podcasts sur notre site internet artdistrict-radio.com. Très belle journée à notre écoute.
Life whole and then be that my whole life long. Got this riddle running round my mind, tangled puzzle that I can't unwind. But as our mystery wheels and climbs, I make the breakthrough, then I'm the voodoo standing. The storm feels like an oasis. Lessons long survive, melt out, oh, be like soothing balm. I could indefinitely say that I don't ever feel dismay. To know the way it is, is how. No, the next is on its way. Got this riddle running around my mind, tangle puzzle that I can't unwind. Wheels and climbs, I make the break. I'm the